Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Adulting Decrypted. This week, we wanted to bring to light a previous episode that we felt is worth repeating. In this episode, which was originally released in Season 2, we spoke with Jerem Ball, a licensed marriage and family therapist, about strategies to love ourselves. Because we felt it needed to be repeated, we edited it down to some of the best parts and wanted to offer it to you all today. We hope you enjoy this week's episode, where we deep dive into the strategies of self-affirmation and meditation. Welcome to Adulting Decrypted, the show where we break down the complex code of common conundrums into logical living. An effort to decrypt the code we call adulting. We are your hosts.
I'm Roscoe the Dad.
I am Gideon. I like to ride BMX bikes, and I'm 14.
And I'm Gene, and I'm 17 years old, currently a senior in high school, and that's really scary.
But he is repping the long hair. I've got to say, it's getting quite long.
You know, I was going to add
longest in the room.
Oh, there we go. A little shout out. I was actually just about to mention his hair too. It is glorious. Mom keeps talking about cutting it and we keep going, no. Anyway, my name's Ashton. Welcome to our podcast. And we have a very amazing special guest, a neighbor, a friend, Mr. Jerem Ball. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Woot woot.
Thanks so much. I believe I am the one with the longer hair in the group here.
Yes, that would be, well, we know it's not my dad.
Process elimination. Thanks, Ashton. For those who can't see at home, it is definitely not the dad.
Yeah, if you have a look at our logo, the hair accurately portrays our faces. Anyway, I don't want to spend too much time because I'm super excited about the overall content of this episode. And for those of you, so you don't turn away, we're going to talk about self-compassion, self-love. It's a very exciting topic, and I know, Jerem, you're very passionate about this topic. So would you mind just giving us a quick introduction about yourself, maybe your profession, your history, why you think you can talk about this, and just your general self so our people get to know you?
Sure. Well, I am a marriage and family therapist, and I both have my own private practice, but I also work for a place called Pathways Real Life Recovery. And Pathways, something I've really enjoyed about working there over the last 4 years is that they do a lot with self-compassion. The treatment starts with learning how to love oneself. And it's just kind of struck me how I wasn't really trained in my professional, in my master's program, I wasn't really trained to teach people how to love themselves. You know, you learn the different modalities in therapy and things like that, and they're all pretty clinical, but none of them, I mean, I suppose all of them, when you drill down to it, they allow you to get to the point where you can love yourself, but none of them like really emphasize that. Mm-hmm. And so, it really struck me. The reason why, I guess I'll kind of share why I became a therapist.
Please.
I guess I can say that I am a self-loather in recovery.
Oh, I like it. That's a good term. Is that something you've coined?
I think it is something that I've coined. I don't remember anybody else ever saying that. But I've got some pretty serious mental health issues. I've got some trauma, some sexual trauma from childhood from a neighbor that really impacted me in terms of my self-concept. In terms of being able to, well, first of all, trust that other people can love me, and second of all, actually love myself. And so in my own process, kind of all the therapy in the world didn't help me until I learned how to start kind of loving myself.
You know, I find it interesting that you said you actually went to school intentionally, right? Because it was something that was interesting to you.
Yeah.
But they really didn't cover some of that core concept of what you have discovered after,
yeah,
right, as part of the process. And you know, not to go too far, one of the greatest scriptures that they say is to love God as you love yourself. And I've often found that to be kind of conflicting in an environment where we are taught really to not like ourselves, yeah. right? And so
I prefer understanding that scripture as love God and yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, right? But I think we forget that self-love and self-care and who we are mm-hmm. is defined so many different ways, yeah. right? And I know that we've spent a lot of time in our... Gene, you talked about your therapy when you're younger and how we spent time going through and saying, I am important, right? And I need to start there, right? And because if I'm not important, the rest of it is irrelevant. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. And
absolutely.
And so, yeah, it was so eye-opening to realize that there is a huge gap.
Yeah.
That's why when Ashton shared with me the topic, I was just like, this is perfect, right? I mean, for me, it's always been seasonal. It's been some of my hardest, darkest months,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
So for us in the States right now, this is our shorter time on our calendar. And I say the States because Ashton has quite a few followers from his time in Australia.
There you go.
You know, this is their summertime, their hot time. So I don't want to disparage that.
Right.
It just happens to be we have very short days. There's a lot of darkness, mm-hmm. you know, and then add the holiday to it, you know, which is supposed to be a time of cheer. But those of us who grew up not financially, well, who cares if it's financial? But I think we base a lot of that off of the haves, have nots.
Yes. Yeah.
But it goes so much deeper. So I think that's why I'm so excited about this topic at this point in time.
Sure.
So
I guess in connecting to that, it's a season where everything's supposed to be happy, joyous, momentous. So I think anything outside of that, you tend to be like, dang it. You
yeah.
know?
Well,
you think about a little bit more. I think like if everybody's so happy or seems so happy and I'm like, I don't seem happy. I feel like this is like extra wrong. Maybe.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the same thing that Facebook does to us and Instagram does to us. We see everybody else's life being so happy. You're quite astute in that, Gideon. Now, with a place like Pathways, we're dealing with some pretty heavy stuff. And so generally, that's not as big of a deal. You know, when somebody comes in with serious trauma or serious addiction or whatever, like, you know, comparing yourself to the neighbor isn't as big of a deal.
Gotcha.
But in my private practice, that is pretty prevalent, especially with my college students.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lots of my college students really struggle with comparing themselves. I mean...
themselves, their relationship, their everything, right?
I mean, just feeling like everybody else has it all together. Everybody else gets such good grades and school is so easy for them. And so, and you know, they're able to work and date and play and... you know, get amazing grades and all that kind of stuff. And they do it all with a smile while they just feel like they're dying inside. You know, they feel like they're drowning. And maybe you can speak to that a little bit, Ashton. I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember feeling that way when I was in college.
No, I would agree with that for sure. Because you look at people, there's people that are on track to achieving their dreams. And I feel like it's something that I've had to get used to is realize that there is a perpetual state in our mind where we constantly want to be better than we are.
Yeah.
And then something that I've really learned as of recently is that I need to remember that life is a process.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times Facebook, social media is all very result-based.
Yes.
It's a place where people are constantly posting results, and I think that can negatively impact my ability to respect the process.
Yeah, I think that's quite astute, Ashton. Ultimately, one of the most devastating words in the English language, as far as I'm concerned, is should.
Yeah, because we should all over ourselves at
there
times,
you
know?
There you go.
And we thought it was funny. And Mom goes, you know, that's kind of like your naked conversations. At some point in time, you got to stop using that as your crutch, you know, for humor.
And here they are again. They've surfaced. But
well, that's just shameless plugs, let's be honest.
Like I say, what seemed to be missing for me, and it amazes me that it's such a novel concept when I talk to colleagues that work at different places and things like that, is how novel it seems that starting with self-compassion is even a thing, right? So at Pathways, we have our clients work on something, we call it strength work. And a big part of strength work is affirmations, which affirmations are interesting because when you start with affirmations, especially if you are a self-loather like me, it feels like crap. There is no belief to what you're saying to yourself. I am a good husband. Like, it feels so foreign. It feels like such a lie. I am a good husband as an example. But little by little, just even the rote processing of repeating affirmations, all of a sudden some of those things start to become more believable, you know. And it's really quite remarkable that just repeating affirmations. I mean, we're pretty intense about it. You've got your list of 25 affirmations, and you have to do them 6 times a day, you know, and you have to read them out loud 6 times a day. But it's amazing the difference it makes in just being able to prepare for the more difficult aspects of therapy, like trauma processing or things like that.
Well, I was very uncomfortable with self-affirmation. But then I find it ironic that we're willing to listen to that dark voice inside our own head, which is also, isn't not a form of self-affirmation. Do you know what I mean?
You're so right, Roscoe.
It's scary, yes. That I go, how come I listen to this dark demon that says, uh-huh, you know, not being a good father, I think, is one of those that scares me the most. You know, you talked about being a father that actually cared and was compassionate, you know, uh-huh, because it felt so, I don't know, foreign. I have a great father, but doesn't mean that, you know, there's broken parts of that relationship, you know, and so for me it was, yeah, it still feels like, oh, there's a disconnect. There's got to be, because nobody's perfect, you know, and you go down those whole paths, and the next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm in a dark spot. This isn't helpful either, right? So I love that this is where you start. Your eye-opening that it was the science, right, which we can't discredit, right? The science behind the brain, all the different neurons and all that snaps, all the whatever, you know, that's my technical term.
That was fancy snaps, medical like jargon, that, right, snaps. There.
You know, all those things that happen. Isn't it? I don't know. Anyways, I was told the kids are not all the way formed when they're 16, 17. So
whatever those things are, they're just not all the way formed.
Yeah, they're not all the way there. When you get my age, then
you're just not finished yet.
We start degenerating at some point in time, and I feel like sometimes I'm there, but that's not what are we talking about? Oh, anyway, so the science has to be there, but I love that you talked about the art.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's with a lot of the science, we can get too clinical. Even, you know, my job is mathematical, science-based, but it's knowing when to put the art form to it that becomes fun.
Ultimately, what I'm thinking is the flow state. When we're able to get into the flow state, things just come naturally, and all of a sudden, for example, for me in the therapist chair, there are these deep connections that occur that and ultimately it's those deep connections that do the healing in therapy. It's not me knowing the right answer. In fact, lots of times somebody will say something and I'm like, I have no clue what to do about this, you know. But when I kind of take a breath and allow myself to instead of shooting on myself, I should know the answer, be able to just sit with somebody as they're experiencing extreme pain. All of a sudden, it becomes very natural, very, very, very natural.
You know, I was, back when I was thinking about therapy, kind of starting that whole, I remember we were talking one day, and it was just kind of like a get to know you, because
you and me,
oh, okay, the two of us, yeah. And you mentioned how you kind of got into your profession and how that connection was one of the biggest parts, like being able to connect with self, and I found that really interesting. And the reason why I'm still kind of thinking about that is when you were talking about that connection is really what solves issues. It's not answers, it's connection. But also, like, to the way you've described those affirmations, because I've heard about affirmations before. I don't know who hasn't, really. But for me, the thing that was new this time around, as we've been talking about this, is the fact that those affirmations, for a while, can be allowed to be disbelieved, I think. It's kind of how I took it. I don't know if that's translating it correctly, but for me, I've always found affirmation hard because I start it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm, like, good at whatever. And then it's like, well, I don't believe it, so move on.
Or like, you feel like a jerk or something. You're like, well, I'm so good at this. And you're like, well, I'm like, I don't want to seem like I'm better than other people. Or
see, and how
like
messed
that.
Up is that? How messed up is it? Is that that? And that's kind of what you were talking about, Roscoe, where we that message of something's wrong with me is just so unimpeded. We'll totally allow ourselves to think just the worst things about ourselves. But the moment we start thinking something positive about ourselves, it's like, uh-oh, humility. I better back off that because I don't want to seem like I'm better than it.
I need to be a good person.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just so backward. It's so backward. Yeah.
Well, you know, you said everybody knows about affirmations, and I don't know that they do. I think this might be a good time to... Is that okay if we deep dive those just a little bit and talk a little bit more about that and the process maybe? Because I think it's one thing to talk at a clinical level. I mean, you've got real deep and you shared some real personal stuff, but I think giving some people some tools, right? Yeah. So... you said there's 25 affirmations that you have them go through. Is that just a number, or is there a specific reason?
No, no. There's no like science behind that number.
Okay.
It's just 25 will push you.
It's just so to have a target to hit.
Yeah, exactly. It's partly about having a target to hit, but it's also about pushing you, and causing you to stretch a little bit, Because I'm a good dad. I know I'm a good dad. You know, that's even though I have some of the same questions that you have, Roscoe, at my core, I know that I'm a good dad. I know that I'm a loving person. You know, I could throw out five right now that are super easy
for you as an individual,
for me as an individual, but I need to. But doing 25, all of a sudden I'm getting into some hard ones, you know?
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
And so what you're asking about, Roscoe, it's kind of funny because that Saturday Night Live skit with Stuart Smalley and Michael Jordan, do you remember that one? I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me.
I remember it vaguely. Okay. I do remember watching it, but man, it's been probably 8 or 10 years.
Yeah. Anyway, that's probably both the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to affirmations, because it's easy to kind of see that and not take them very seriously because he's just so silly in the way he delivers it. But no, affirmations are generally I am statements. lots of times... what I find they're the most impactful when you get past roles, like I am a good dad, and actually get into I'm a loving person, you know, get into actual attributes about yourself, not attributes about your roles in life. That's when affirmations seem to really have the most impact. And something that we do with our clients is if the affirmations aren't believable, but they're stretching themselves and they're trying to do the work, we encourage them to use "I choose to be" statements instead of I am statements.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You made me think of, did I write roles or did I, you know, because part of my daily ritual, I think I focus a lot on the roles, right? Because that's the safe zone, right? Yeah. But I love that you say that you basically have them take a step back and say, look, you got to make it believable because you stand in there in front of the mirror saying these things, yelling these things, you know, whatever it is that's helping you break through.
Well, it's easy for it to cause a shame spiral. It can really cause a bad shame spiral.
Oh, wow.
I wonder, what's your experience with that?
Well, I know that I've done it because, like, in your health class, they're like, okay, write down 10, and then you're, like, getting past 5, and you're like, and then, like, at one point, the teacher actually came over and wrote them down, and I'm like, well, am I?
Yeah.
Am I? But then you're like, well, no, because I've done this wrong, this wrong, mm-hmm. this wrong. And it's like pounding into you, and you just you spiral.
Yeah.
So, Gene, so you said you did it in health class, and then one of your areas that you struggle with, right, is writing, because you want it always to be perfect, right? That goes back to a couple weeks ago episode with Jason Hewlett, where you're like, look, I don't know what my goals are. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, think about what you don't want. You're like, oh, that's easy. I can name those off. Right. And so it helped you define some of your goals, right. And what you wanted based on what you didn't want. So is that why she finally came over and just started writing them down so that you could finish the assignment? Or he, I don't know what your help.
Well, yeah. She came around because she was helping the other people that weren't finishing it. And so she came over, wrote down a few and to help me just finish it, because I really have a hard time writing down things, and especially things I'm good at, because I tend to see like, well, yeah, I could be good at math, but I mean, there's all these people that are better.
Or there's one instance where I didn't do my math problem right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool, Gene. I appreciate you sharing that. So then I think we catch ourselves there, right? Is where we say, look, I made these affirmations, but they're not real.
There's the exception.
And so I like that you said, what was the terminology you said to take a step back?
I choose to be. If you can't fully believe it.
I like that.
It's a little bit more palatable. It has a lower threshold to kind of say, I choose to be.
Well, then at that point in time, doesn't that allow you that moment? They say there's that moment in time between a situation and a reaction, mm-hmm. that you have that moment to make a choice of what you are. And if you say, I choose to be a compassionate person, mm-hmm. you all of a sudden open up that door to say, oh, wow, I did something compassionate.
Yeah.
Right? Because
you can recognize it when it happens. And that's the important thing.
And then you wish you could. I'd imagine maybe you don't, but I'd imagine there's times you wish you could say, I wish you could see who you are.
Yes.
Because
I spend a lot of time fighting people's own self-dialogue, self-monologue, whatever.
Self-perception.
Whatever.
Yeah, inner dialogue or monologue, whatever you call it, to your point. Yeah.
I spend a lot of time challenging it, both asking that. My clients, not just my clients, people that I love, to challenge it, but me also challenging it. I'm very quick to, I'm actually kind of a hard therapist because I'll call you on your crap. But that also means I'll call you on your crap when you're being mean to yourself.
That's awesome.
You know, but something, something you said reminded me, I mean, it's important to understand the difference between guilt and shame.
Oh, interesting.
When it comes to self-compassion. Guilt is actually a very positive experience. Guilt helps us to actually round into the person that we want to become. Shame is nothing but destructive. It does nothing but pull us down. Guilt is constructive because it is, I feel bad. I feel bad right now because I did something either against my moral code or something that made me it's not sitting right with me, right? Whereas shame is, I did something bad because I am bad. There is something wrong with me, and that is why I did something wrong. We have these neural pathways that we've formed in our brains, like physically, literally formed in our brains, and unfortunately for most of us, those neural pathways are quite negative. The path of least resistance when it comes to reaction to different circumstances is, oh, see, this is why I suck. See, this is what's wrong with me, right? And so a big thing that something like affirmations does is it starts to create new neural pathways. And that's where even just the rote repeating of your affirmations can be really beneficial because it just starts to create new and different ways of reacting to the same stimulus.
Hello. If you're listening to this right now, that means you're currently listening to an episode of Adulting Decrypted. And let me just say thank you. My name's Ashton, one of the hosts of Adulting Decrypted, and I wanted to steal a quick second of your time to do a shameless little plug. If you've listened to our podcast for any sort of time, you know that we talk about a bunch of different stuff all about adulting. Because our goal is to help individuals in this task we call adulting. Now, we have just revamped the way that we do this. If you go to adultingdecrypted.com, you can see all of our episodes sorted out by category. We've sorted it into financial, practical, emotional, social, and things just for fun. So, if any of those categories are of particular interest to you right now, you can go onto the website, look through there, and see all of our episodes that correlate with that specific thing. This website's completely free to use. It's just another tool for our listeners to find things that are more important to them now. So, for example, if I was looking at it, I'd scroll through and say, hey, you know what? I want to see what the Adulting Decrypted crew has talked about socially. Well, one of our first episodes, season 1, episode 3, how do I talk to people? That's where we talked about all how to talk to people. So if that's something you want right now, you can go find that right now. Also in this one, season 3, episode 15, The Power of a Humble Mediator, where we talked to one of my old bosses about his business as a mayor, also as a small theater owner. Some really cool stuff. So, if you're looking for a better way to organize through all your self-help podcasts, try adultingdecrypted.com and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Well, I feel like one thing that could help is that it forces you to clear up your mind and clear out the dark thoughts that might be creeping in, and just so that you can just try to clear your mind in a way.
For me, in answer to the question, one of my first thoughts was like, I think it's because it forces you to spend time with yourself. That would be my guess as to why.
You're both not wrong, but you're also not right.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about it again, and I was like,
yeah, that's true.
Well, it just keeps you thinking for so long and so deep. Like, you don't think about anything else. You don't think about what you need to do, like, normal. You don't think about, like, ooh, I have this deadline. You think, hey, I need to help myself out. Mm-hmm. Like, you think about the deeper thoughts that you wouldn't normally think about. Or, like, when you're laying in bed before you fall asleep, you think about those thoughts. And how a lot of people, I've seen this, they'll be like, yeah, I get this thing right before I go to sleep. I'm like, ooh, I need to try this tomorrow. And then they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think meditation is that thing in the morning or midday where you get that same motivation. You're like, ooh, I need to do this thing. And so I think that's why it helps.
Sure. Sure. You know, I guess I'm not right either, because for me the biggest thing was it calmed me and took me out of my shoulds and let me physically dump where I was at and the pressures of day to day go away, and it does clear my mind and allows me to do the next relevant thing instead of the 15 things that I think need to be done.
Yeah.
Right, as a busy adult, and you're going, oh, I got to pay the car bill, I got to feed the dog. That's been the hardest part for me, to just going into that meditative state and actually not think. Has been thinking on not thinking,
right?
I don't know, maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Well, so let me actually present this. Let's practice for a second, and for everybody that's listening at home as well. Meditate. Go. Now
I failed.
It's not good radio. Wait. What's that, Roscoe?
I said I failed because I looked over to Ash and he's squinting his eyes.
You failed?
Yeah, because I wasn't.
What does that mean?
I wasn't. I didn't pass the meditation test.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Don't ask me hard. I don't want therapy right now. I just want a friend.
Never become friends with a therapist. Then. No, like, without filter, what was your experience like, Ashton?
Oh, for me, I was like, this is incredibly awkward because if I actually try, I'm going to fall asleep.
Oh, okay.
So for me, a lot of this was like, what is everyone else doing? I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I don't know the first thing about meditation. Right? So, well, I mean, I'll just chill here for a second.
Well,
I
guess. Gideon, you know. What did you do?
I know a lot of the meditation for me to get me to not think about other stuff is to count breathing.
Oh, okay.
So
you actually know techniques.
Well, kind of, I guess.
How did you do?
You did pay attention.
How did you do with it?
So, something I do a lot is I zone out. Like, either I draw or I just look in a direction and not really pay attention to what's happening. Like, I'm all in my head. Mm-hmm. I don't like closing my eyes because I think that's kind of weird. But I would just, I kind of looked back. I looked at the table really vaguely, not really picking out anything, and I counted my breaths. I was like, in 2, 3, hold 2, 3, out 2, 3.
Oh, okay.
Hold 2, 3, in 2, 3.
That's cool. They've taught you stuff like that. It's called box breathing. That's cool. They've taught you that. That's cool. What about you, G?
So what I, at first, when you're like, okay, now meditate, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. What did I do? But after that, what I like to do is during some theater games, one of them is we sit into like a circle facing out, and we just got to sit and like just try to feel each other to stand up at the exact same time without any type of communication.
That's cool.
So what I try to do is just try to feel the air around me and just like try to feel what other people are feeling is what I started to do.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And it's interesting that the two youngest of us have been the most exposed to meditation, right? And we're the most prepared to receive that meditate command, right? No, the reason why it is so beneficial in our process is actually because of the struggle. It forces us to struggle. Because we can't help but feel like we're doing it wrong, right?
Wow.
We can't help but feel like... oh, I really suck at this.
And somebody has a better experience at it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, exactly. He did it so much better than I did.
Exactly.
You're like, he got in touch with yourself
We should ourselves.
Yeah.
We should all over ourselves. And but it gives us an opportunity to challenge that thought in real time. It gives us the opportunity to recognize, oh, my mind just, you know, it's called the monkey mind. There's a wonderful teacher named Thich Nhat Hanh, and he calls it the monkey mind, where your mind just goes off. You know, you're supposed to be not thinking of anything, and your mind just goes off and wanders off and thinks whatever it's going to think, right? Or we know that we're supposed to be counting our breaths, but, you know, we count to two. We count two breaths, and all of a sudden our mind is wandering again, right? And we can't help but judge ourselves and be like, oh, my gosh, I'm so bad at this. But it's actually like repetitions. It's repetitions of challenging that thought. Oh my gosh, nope, it's okay. It's okay. That's what's happening. My mind is going off. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bring it back to my breath. And 0.2 seconds later, when my mind wanders off again, it gives me another opportunity to recognize that, oh, and it's going off again.
Do you think that's an internal thing that you would say to yourself? Or like, if you realize you're going off, do you actually say that out loud?
What do you mean?
Like, if you're trying to meditate and you're like, you start thinking of stuff you need to do, or in that way, you said that you say, like, I'm going to come back and I'm gonna try this again. Is that something you would say out loud?
I think it would... could possibly be beneficial to say it out loud. I don't usually say it out loud. I usually just kind of think it, and inevitably 0.2 seconds later my mind wanders off again, and all of a sudden I'm having to bring my mind back. And it might be a very beneficial tool. It's something I've never considered, Gideon, but to say that out loud, to kind of create a different experience with it by not only verbalizing it, but also hearing yourself verbalize it. I can see that being really beneficial.
So just to capture what you just said about meditation, it's the struggle.
Uh-huh.
It's noticing the struggle and realizing that you're making progress, or that you're willing to put yourself in vulnerability. Both, either way, the struggle's real.
Well, it's being kind to yourself through the struggle.
Oh,
learning
there you
how
go.
To be kind to yourself through the struggle. Not judge the struggle, not judge yourself because of the struggle.
So notice
what's
happening.
But to actually embrace it.
Yeah, notice what's happening and then, like, not, I need to fix this now.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, that was a problem, mm-hmm. but, you know, I can try it again. I can always try it again.
Yep.
And you just, like, be nice to yourself.
Uh-huh. It literally gives you opportunities, like, limitless opportunities to be nice to yourself. To practice being nice to yourself in real time.
Right, that struggle, and if you're willing to put yourself in that environment and prove to yourself that it's okay to be vulnerable, right, even in that real personal. I mean, because really nobody knows if you meditate except yourself, and nobody knows how, quote-unquote, well you do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the irony. You go, you failed? How did you fail? And I said, well, I failed to do it on command. I guess maybe it's a fail. But that struggle... you can allows you to realize that it's real and that you can make progress. Mm-hmm. And you think about, you're doing that over such a short period of time that when you look at your other life challenges, right, it allows you to give yourself grace.
Yes.
And I think that's really what it is. We put these goals out here, and I think that we've talked about it a couple times, that life's a journey, and you can say that, you know, you can say, hey, I'm trying to be better than I was last week, mm-hmm. the day before. But realizing that we're putting ourselves in this short-term struggle is a good thing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Literally embracing the struggle.
I had never looked at meditating in that manner.
Therapy in general is just such... I mean, it's such a personal experience, not only for the client, but for the therapist as well. And for it to be truly connecting, it has to be that way. And so I've learned to really embrace the discomfort of therapy. And so I've learned to really embrace the discomfort of people being really annoyed with me.
I love the value in that, because, like, one thing that we often say at Drumline is embrace the discomfort, especially at auditions. Like, I was actually the teacher on the teaching side of auditions this time around. And it's kind of interesting because, like, when you go to auditions yourself, it's very uncomfortable because you're like, holy crap, like, am I prepared? Am I going to do it right? But then on the teacher side, like, I had to remind myself that these are some of the emotions that people are feeling, because I'm just so excited to try and teach people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, but for me, it was like, embrace the discomfort is such valuable advice.
Mm-hmm. I know,
really, like,
I saw this, like, theory kind of quite a while ago. I was on YouTube and I actually found these people called Yes Theory, which is really cool. They do a lot of different crazy adventures and stuff, and their main tagline is seek discomfort. So they have a whole bunch of clothes and stuff, and that's what they always talk about, is trying to get out of your comfort zone, not just to embrace the discomfort, but to grow and seek the discomfort,
being proactive about finding discomfort.
Self-compassion is where it all starts. Some tips to help you get there is self-affirmation, because it stretches yourself. Meditation, because you're bad at it.
and you learn
to be bad at it. Is there any final thoughts you have along that vein that you'd like to share with our listeners before we finish up?
I mean, just kind of along with what you said earlier, Roscoe, it's just, we're so quick to believe the crap that our mind tells us about ourselves. We're so quick to use that one piece of evidence that I got that math problem wrong. So I must not be good at math. And we're so slow to recognize the whole boatloads of evidence that we're good, you know, that we are loving, kind, compassionate, capable, talented people. And the more we're able to not only challenge that, and we the more we can flip the script a little bit, the better off everybody is, the better off the world is around us, the better off our kids are, the better off, you know, whether we're married now or we'll be married in the future, the better off those relationships will be. That's why I'm so excited, Gideon, to hear that they're teaching meditation in school, because that's something that will have long-term benefits. Even if you don't pay attention, just being exposed to it is so much more than, you know, older folks like me and Roscoe ever had. And so, yeah, just please, as you're listening to this, please allow yourself to create some space to suck sometimes.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Adult and Decrypted. We really enjoyed having this week's conversation, and we hope you did as well.
If you ever want to comment on a topic, you can send us a message to our website, adultingdecrypted.com, our email, adultingdecrypted@gmail.com, or through our Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn accounts at adultingdecrypted.
If you have any topics for the show that you would like us to talk about, or if you are a parent and want us to talk about something your kid should know, send us a message on any of the accounts mentioned. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for someone you think we should have on our show, feel free to send us an email detailing your thoughts to adultingdecrypted@gmail.com. Adulting is teamwork.
We have merch. If you want to show off your Adulting Decrypted pride, check out our website, adultingdecrypted.com, or our partner website with shop.spreadshirt.com/adulting-decrypted. Lastly, if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on our Patreon at Adulting Decrypted. Along with the benefits that come with our Patreon, and trust us, there are some pretty good ones in there, you will not only be helping us continue in the effort to make great content, but you will be part of a community of individuals all trying their best to adult. We appreciate you listening, enjoying, and leaving your positive reviews, and we can't wait until next time on Adulting Decrypted. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Adult and Decrypted. We really enjoyed having this week's conversation, and we hope you did as well.
If you ever want to comment on a topic, you can send us a message to our website, adultingdecrypted.com, our email, adultingdecrypted@gmail.com, or through our Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn accounts at Adulting Decrypted.
If you have any topics for the show that you would like us to talk about, or if you are a parent and want us to talk about something your kid should know, send us a message on any of the accounts mentioned. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for someone you think we should have on our show, feel free to send us an email detailing your thoughts to adultingdecrypted@gmail.com. Adulting is teamwork.
We have merch. If you want to show off your Adulting Decrypted pride, check out our website, adultingdecrypted.com, or our partner website with shop.spreadshirt.com/adulting-decrypted. Lastly, if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on our Patreon at Adulting Decrypted. Along with the benefits that come with our Patreon, and trust us, there are some pretty good ones in there, you will not only be helping us continue in the effort to make great content, but you will be part of a community of individuals all trying their best to adult. We appreciate you listening, enjoying, and leaving your positive reviews. Now, the special song from Gene and Gideon.